Hello there, and welcome to another Night Vale Patreon behind-the-scenes episode in which Jeffrey and I, the writers of the show that you presumably like, answer some questions about it from you. We will do this occasionally throughout the year, so keep an eye out for calls for more questions if you would like your questions answered on these episodes. Jeffrey, do you want to start us off?
Sure. So Rod asks, what's the story behind Cecil's last name? Is he related to George Gershwin and Laura Palmer? I really loved this question. I like the idea that we would create Cecil's last name from those two last names. I see the Twin Peaks link there. We don't quite have the George Gershwin tie in our show there, but this might actually be better for you to answer, Joseph, because you were the one who named Cecil.
That's right. And my answer is I don't really remember, to be honest. I know I chose Gershwin because I specifically wanted Cecil to be Jewish. And so I chose a Jewish name. Why Palmer?
Former Royals third baseman Dean Palmer was
after
what
Dean
I
Palmer.
Presumed. Yes.
So, Alyssa asks, how do you approach writing characters with different lived experiences and identities from you, and what have you learned in the process? This is something that, you know, there's entire workshops. The science fiction writer Niecy Shaw teaches entire workshops on this exact question. It's a question that everyone should consider because I would say that one thing is if you're writing an entire world of people, they can't all be like you because that's not what the world looks like. And it's a really boring idea of the world. So it was really important to us that Night Vale reflect what society actually looks like. I would say this, which is always start with the fact that people are human beings, that ultimately everyone's a human being who is different from you only in one the cultural context of how they were raised and to how the culture around them treats them, the treatment they've received from that relationship between them and the world around them. So if you start with this idea of everyone's essential humanity, that there's no, you know, you sometimes read books that include characters that are different than the author, and you can really feel the author being like, how would a person like this think? And the answer is always they think like a person. They think like you. They're you. They're a human being. And then from there, you want to layer on their experiences of the world, their relationship to the world, because it's not a mystic thing. People generally live in ways that make sense if you understand how they've related to the world and how the world relates to them. So if you think about that, yeah, that's a helpful place to start. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of other answers, a lot of, you know, knowing a lot of different types of people is very helpful for this. Uh-huh. But if you don't, then just listening to and reading a lot from people who actually have lived these experiences. But I would say always starting with it's a human being. Start there.
I think that's a great place to start. And I think if you have the circle of friends, this resource of people who can do some level of a sensitivity reading for you, keeping in mind that if you have a friend who is in a wheelchair, that they cannot speak for every single person with a disability in the entire world. But if you're writing a character who's in a wheelchair, that person can at least read what you've written and give you some sense of if at least for them it felt like a realistic a believable portrayal of the life a person might lead. And it's not the entire story. It's more about making sure that you understand certain situations that character might find them in, that entering a grocery store or getting into a car is just not the same experience for a person bound to a wheelchair as it is for, say, me. So understanding that as a writer, and that kind of goes back to what you were saying, Joseph, about having different friends and being kind of well-read from writers of all different backgrounds who write stories of people of all different backgrounds. And if you have people that can help you with these readings to ask those questions, I think that's really, really big. Sid asks, Have you two ever had any disagreements about the direction you want the story to take? And in that regard, have there been any potential plot points or characters that have been left behind due to the both of you having to compromise? I mean, we've had disagreements about the directions we want stories to take. I mean, I think we talk about this before with as collaborators, you know, some of it is having that willingness to compromise, and that willingness to compromise some just comes from your just inner gut instinct, but a lot of it just comes from you just know a person long enough and you find that you work really well together, and that comes from a trust and an admiration of the work that they do. So, you know, it's more, I always think about Evan Hartso, one of my theater company members back in the Neo-Futurist. She had this, she didn't invent this, but it was this idea when we talked in meetings called Fist to Five. Do you know this, Joseph, at all? Do you know? No. Fist to Five? So it was this thing when people would get into an argument about how to proceed with something. You would do fist to five rating. So fist is zero, and then you have one, two, three, four, and five fingers up. Five means I 100% champion this. I will die on this hill to make this happen. And zero is I absolutely refuse this, and I will die on this hill to keep this from happening. And the idea is that you kind of want to find your way in the one through four area. When you have the five or the fist at that point, you have somebody who is going to really battle. And I always think about that rating system because the people who do fist or five are people who don't really want to compromise. They want to move forward with their thing. And sometimes people made such strong, compelling arguments that you eventually saw their side. There is some value in doing that. But at a certain point, if you want to move forward, you do have to relent in something. And I don't think Joseph or I have ever come to being at fist or five in any of our disagreements about something. But it's usually about best service to the story. So I don't feel like we've ever left anything behind that we felt was worth fighting for, or that we scratched both of our ideas and compromised and made some crappy plan. I think it was usually just saying like, no, I think you made a strong enough point here that yes, this is probably the direction we should go. And I've never looked back with any regret on any of those decisions we've made.
Yeah. I mean, so a couple things. One is, having been on the periphery of the Neo-Futurist for years, I have heard the phrase like, oh yeah, they fisted that idea. and I kind of from context figured out what it meant, but this is actually the very first time I'm learning that system and what that even means. I just thought it was this weird nickname that the Neo-Futurists had for refusing something. secondly, yeah, it's interesting. We get this question in so many forms so much, and I think, and we never quite know how to answer it because the answer is it's not like we always come in with the same idea, but it's so rare that we're like have any sort of fundamental disagreement, mainly because I think we just have this invisible system of picking our battles. Like, we can kind of sense in talking about an idea if which of us is more invested in this, and the other person just kind of backs off because it's like that's sort of the give and take is that you seem really excited about this idea, so even though I don't quite get it, I'm going to go with it. Or you seem to be really unsure about this idea, and I wasn't that into it anyway, so let's just skip it. That's just sort of unsaid and built in. But I do think people are so excited at the idea of difficult collaboration, or like there's always, you know, stories about people that work together, but they hate each other, and people love that. And it's such a toxic thing. Don't end up in that work situation. Don't end up working with people that you hate or that you're constantly fighting with. That's not something to aspire to. That's something that people like to make fictional stories about. But ultimately, what you don't hear about are so many partnerships that just quietly happen, and people don't have big fights or throw fits or otherwise hurt each other in the process of just getting on and making a thing together. Essie. Did I do the... Oh, yep.
Yep.
Okay, coming back. Essie asks, Many writers and artists get first published or do their most popular works after their 30s, but for some reason there is this myth of having to peak in your early 20s or before 30s to have, quote, any chance on whatever field it is. What would you say from your experience? How have your writing careers advanced and what kind of a path you have walked since you began writing? Also, this might have been mentioned somewhere but hasn't caught my eye yet. Do you have any other options for your professions if writing didn't work out? And did you ever seriously reconsider? Yeah, I mean, I don't know actually if there's this idea that you need to peak in your early 20s with writing. I do think there's this idea that you need to peak in your 30s. I think with like novelists especially, there's this sort of expectation. I think the toxic expectation is, oh, and writers tend to hit in their 30s. But the truth is it happens all over. You know, Zadie Smith was like 21 when she wrote one of the best books of the century. And other writers write their first book when they're 60. And that I think Toni Morrison, I think, was like in her 60s when she wrote her first book. I might be misremembering that. But the point is, it happens at all ages. You know, there's other art forms where that's less true. Musicians, for instance, there tends to be this expectation that, like, especially big pop stars need to be young. And, you know, this idea that, like, once you're in your 50s, are you still relevant? Or are you just playing for your fans that you had back then? And that, I think, is a real problem in music. I think it's less of a thing in writing, partly because writing is less based on, you know, for music, especially in popular music, you have to be pretty. And that's less true in writing. Yeah, for me, I like definitely had this desire. I've wanted to be a writer since I was 3, and I had like fantasies about like I'm gonna have a bestseller when I'm a teenager. And that didn't happen. And it didn't happen when I was in the early 20s. It ended up like the first Nightville novel came out. God, it was 2015, so I was 29.
You were 29. That was weird because you were 29, and I had just turned 40 a few months before it came out. It was very funny to be in my 40s with my first novel, and you were in your 20s with our first novel.
Yeah, and that was, relatively speaking, very young, but it wasn't, I don't know, like, it just kind of happened then. It wasn't sort of the goal. Yeah, I just think worrying about what age you are, I think just make good work, and you have no control over what work might spark, and the work you write that might spark with people might happen when you're 20, but it might happen when you're 60. And you just have no control over that. The only thing you have control over is just keep making good work.
I do think so much of success can hinge on just the sheer force of the talent you have. You know, sometimes the writing is just so unavoidable. You know, Zadie Smith is a great example of that at you know, in her early 20s. But I think most people don't come about their talent in that way, that there just isn't that virtuosic thing so early on. I think so many artists take years and years to hone their craft. And some people start very early, like you, Joseph. And some people, I was very interested in being a writer, but I didn't start taking it seriously until I was kind of at the end of college, where I really started being like, I mean, I thought I wanted to be a writer, but I didn't actually actively start writing just regularly, the idea that I need to be doing this all the time, until I was in my early 20s. And but I, you know, I wrote things when I was younger, but I wasn't actively doing it. I didn't have any goals for myself. And so I realized, like, oh, as I sort of hit my 30s, it was 10 years of regularly writing and wanting to be a playwright and trying to find a theater company, somebody that did something that I could be involved with, that I could regularly be creating the things I wanted to create. And through that, found my way to the Neo-Futurists, and through that met you and started getting, we got into so many podcasts, and then find your way into the podcast world this way. And it's a roundabout path that when I was first thinking in at 20 about like, oh, I have to be really active if I want to be a good writer, this path was not available when I was 20, because I was 20 in 1995. There was no podcast to speak of at that point. So yeah, I think it's this thing of with writing, you have this great advantage of like, you're not trying to be in a boy band. You know, you're not trying to be a Hollywood ingenue, where we have these limitations on physical appearance and age. In writing, obviously, ageism exists in the publishing world. It just exists differently. And it's not so it's not so direct as it is in Hollywood or even in the music industry. And so I would say it's more a matter of the time you spend putting into your work than it is about your age at all. But the longer you keep at it, the more chance you have of having some level of success in that field. So if you start late, it may take you a little longer to get to it.
If there's any other options for professions. For me, not really. I've wanted to be write in some capacity since I was 3 years old and someone explained what being a writer was. And so I guess like I've looked at other things. Like I got a couple steps into the like application process for writing video games with BioWare at one point. But ultimately, like, I always was like, I'm gonna write in some capacity. And I think if things hadn't worked out and the years went on, I might have like tried to get into like ad copywriting or just something where I was writing. But I think some aspect, what I always told people, like, kind of in that period of my kind of mid-20s is like, I just want someone to pay me to write. That's it. And I'm pretty flexible around the circumstances.
I had reached the point in my early mid-30s where I was very happy getting to do the Neo Futurist show on a regular basis and just keeping writing. And then I had a day job working at a company I really liked working for. And so it was kind of at that point in my 30s where I started realizing, like, I'm just going to commit to this writing thing and just keep doing this all the time and just keep trying to say yes to working with people and doing things and hoping that something works out there. And so my consideration for my other profession really was to just maintain that, right? It was always going to be, I'm going to stick with this day job and try to write things on weekends and nights when I can. Other than that, when I first got out of college, I got a job at doing nonprofit fundraising, which was still what I was doing as my full-time day job. So I guess that would have been the fallback if I had given up on writing entirely.
Great. So I think that does it for this behind the scenes episode. Thank you so much again for being a Patreon member, for donating to this. It really, especially in this really tough year for artists, this is going to make a huge difference for our ability to make the show for you. So thank you so much. We really appreciate it.
And if you have a chance, for all you Weird Scouts out there on our Patreon, we've started in March of 2020, we started doing Wednesday and Saturdays. We've been doing quarantine variety shows where Joseph or I and or special guests will be there for you on Patreon to entertain you with stories and songs and maybe some jokes and just to try and have some time together and have some fun and some laughs while we're at home.
Thank you.
Thank y'all.